gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Many Americans bring preconceived ideas to any political exposition and rate interviews according to their ideology. But among less intense Americans, I think the consensus is that I got my questions in.
No.
The president answered some, dodged some, but the back and forth was spirited and worthwhile.
No.
Also, I think Fox News showed the world that we are not in business to demean the president.
No.
We want answers,
no.
But are not on a crusade to harm the administration.
No. Oh, my God. Okay, everybody, let's have a GoToMeeting about that.
Yeah.
GoToMeeting, the best way to host an online meeting. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Type in the promo code Stephanie. Be sure to use the promo code Stephanie. What is the only way to placate me when Hal Sparks can't be here?
Richard Wolf.
Yes. Hal Sparks on the Progressive Cruise this weekend can't be here, and there's only one way to placate me, and that is MSNBC's Richard Wolf.
Wait a second. He's on a Progressive Cruise?
Yes.
Is he somewhere nice and warm?
He is in San Juan as we speak,
yes.
I believe.
How did we miss that invitation?
I got the invitation. The invitation. I can't do boats, but that's not important now. Richard Wolf, you have to, because we have to dive in on this O'Reilly presidential interview, because I'm all fired up and ready to go about it. I don't know if you saw Bill Maher last night on Lawrence O'Donnell, but I thought he made very good points. And then, of course, this morning on Morning Joe, they were debating. I mean, he just basically said what I think is fairly obvious to us, and that is this president, I think, is treated with a level of disrespect that we've never seen. I think somebody did the count. I think Lawrence did the count 72 times. O'Reilly interrupted the president.
Right.
Well, and so Bill Maher was making that point, and you know, Joe Scarborough this morning was, oh please, with the jokes he made about George Bush. There we go with the false equivalency again, right? I mean, Bill Maher, first of all, George Bush would never have sat for an interview with Bill Maher. He's a comedian that makes jokes.
Right. Well. Let me do it like this, okay? There was plenty of vociferous, outrageous, and outraged criticism of President Bush. What was different is doing it face-to-face, and that's where the respect question comes to play.
Thank you.
For a start, you know, let's get into the equivalence here. This would be President Bush, the right equivalent would be President Bush sitting down for an interview with Keith Olbermann.
I was just going to say that, which he would
Keith
never have done.
After Keith Olbermann had told him to shut the hell up, right? Okay, so I'm not saying, there were lots of things in those special comments that I would never have said and never did say.
Right.
And I don't think they were respectful. I personally believe that I was always respectful, even as I criticized things that President Bush said and did. But face-to-face, when you're interviewing someone, the question is, can you press them hard, as interviewers should, and still maintain respect for the office of the presidency? Because the presidency has a special position in this country.
Richard, you raised, first of all, I think the number one thing, that you have got to give the president, no matter who you are, points for sitting down. George Bush, in a million years, would never have sat down with Keith Olbermann or Bill Maher or anybody like that. So the fact that
with good humor. He did it with good humor, and he did it in a. He helped himself no end. Did Bill O'Reilly help himself? I think the fact that he's having to go out there and justify himself tells you actually he was taking heat from all sides. Bill O'Reilly did not come off well from this. It wasn't actually the most watched TV interview ever. He said it was going to be
in the history of the world.
And he clearly has no sense of self-awareness. I mean, really, is he trying to fool his own viewers to say that they don't actually go out and rail against this president as being the most evil, anti-American, un-American creature you've
and
ever seen?
By
in the
way,
White House? Come
but,
on,
yeah.
Who's trying to fool?
Yeah, and by the way, Richard, I'm glad you're saying this here because, as you know, this is already the most listened to radio interview in the history of the world.
Progressive Cruise.
But Richard, you know, that's exactly the point, is that Bill O'Reilly makes a big show of saying, I'm just fair and balanced. I'm not one side or the other. I asked the, you know, President Bush tough questions. Well, Chris was saying it's posted somewhere online. Any interview he did with George Bush was entirely more deferential and different in tone. And that's all Bill Maher was talking about, is there is just a level of, like, just patronizing and disrespect to the President of the United States that he obviously showed in this interview that they never did to George Bush.
Well, even if he thinks that he actually is a paragon of journalism and the most fair and balanced creature that ever crossed the airwaves, he obviously has never watched Glenn Beck. Because, I mean, really, Glenn Beck accuses this president of being a communist tyrant. Nothing less, actually, you know, that everything is slouching towards this, you know, gulag style of America. I mean, it's nonsense. They're not fooling their own viewers. They're not fooling anyone else. And I don't actually have any problem with it. If they want to, if that's what Fox News wants to be, then fine. Just cut the crap about being real journalists, because you're not. You're advocates. You're partisan. That's the whole brand. And the president knew that going in there. He didn't think, oh, well, suddenly Bill O'Reilly's going to be, you know, Christiane Amanpour here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, Richard, it is a different media universe we find ourselves, isn't it, going into 2012. I mean, John King said it on CNN that they have a Fox problem. I mean, you know, we are in a universe now where several of the, you know, perhaps Republican candidates in 2012 are on the payroll at Fox, and they can't, so they can't do interviews anywhere else. I mean, it just, it's...
Well, they can't, and they choose not to as well. I mean, look, they could if they, if Sarah Palin went to Fox and said, you know what, I really need to go out and talk to other people because I'm a national figure, and they would say, yeah, okay, that's fine. They're not going to, well, they're going to hold her to a contract. She could walk into any broadcaster and get any deal she wants. So that's not really the issue. The issue is that this is a Republican Party that does not feel the need to go outside of its own confines and its own comfort zone, which is going to be fine for them in the primaries, but is not going to take them anywhere close to a general election. That's the difference. That's why, look, the president didn't go on Fox News because he likes Fox News. He went on there because he has to be president for the whole country and get reelected by the whole country. And you cannot do that just by talking, sadly.
Yeah.
Just to progressives or to people who watch MSNBC.
Well, you know, Richard, you make a good point that I absolutely agree with, that you do hear a lot of progressives say, why does he even bother? He shouldn't do that. He shouldn't go to the Chamber of Commerce. I disagree. This president has always run on finding common ground, which he did even with the Chamber of Commerce on the Stimulus Act. But I think, you know, further, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's why I give him great points for courage for going on Fox News to do O'Reilly.
Yeah, I mean, look, it takes a certain amount of it's a bit of a gamble for a president to get outside his comfort zone. You know, it's very nice there in the bubble inside the White House with all the advisors, you know, saluting you and clicking their heels and saying, yes, sir, no, sir. So to get out of there when you're this far away from a general election, it is a gamble and takes a certain amount of guts. Is it courageous? I mean, really, Bill O'Reilly's so predictable. What was he going to do? You could have scripted every single one of those questions. You know, and they're a joke. The idea that he's a socialist, the man who saved Wall Street, is that, you know, if you're a socialist, you let Wall Street go under. And so how hard is this stuff to push back on? It's not courage like the great people who are representing this country around the world in uniform and out of uniform. On the other hand, there just aren't enough Democrats out there. This isn't about whether he thinks he can bring the country together, whether you think being bipartisan is a good thing or a bad thing. Just on the numbers, there are not enough Republicans or Democrats for either candidate on either side of those parties to get elected. So you need to get independents. Independents do watch Fox News. They watch a bunch of different things. You have to meet them where they are. You cannot just say, well, come to me. Click on the website.
Right.
You'll find it there. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Yep, and the president is doing it again today, as you know, Richard. I mean, he's inviting Boehner. And first invitation Boehner has accepted, I guess, for lunch at the White House today, right?
Right. He's not too busy after all. I think there is there's a downside for Boehner to say no to all of this stuff. The state dinner, I mean, the state dinner is an affair of the country, of international cooperation. It's not a partisan event. And that's what I think people are losing and missing, that the presidency is really special. It's the head of the party. He leads a legislative effort, but he's also head of state. And if the Republicans want to put anything on the board in terms of saying, we've done this, we have actually achieved something, and go to the next election saying, this is what we stand for, they're going to need the president on board, too.
Yep. Richard, I think it's interesting, though, to see what they'll do, because already, the news today, the House will vote to block funds on health care. next week. So, you know, again, doesn't matter what they do say at this lunch. They obviously continue to just try to defeat the president in any way they can. But, you know, it seems like they've already miscalculated out of the gate with this, the Patriot Act, don't you think? They thought they had the votes, and you know.
You know, power in Washington is defined not just by whether you win an election, but by whether people are afraid of you and whether you have authority, a sort of intangible thing. For them to lose authority and to lose the vote and a vote count at this early stage really suggests they don't have control of anything. They don't have a good read on their own party, on the way the House works. And that's really unsettling, because part of the shtick coming in here is, we run this thing, we rule it, you've just got to do what we want. If you cannot control your own source of power, then you really don't have that intangible mojo. And in contrast, you have a president who took his shellacking and is rising up in the polls now. So power can be very fluid. We saw the same thing after Bush won re-election. Everyone said in 2004, my goodness, this guy can do whatever he wants. And then within about a month or so, he starts to go back to the Republican Congress and say, you know, I want to do things on the military, on Social Security, and he kept getting beaten back. And that's when, within about a month or two, people said, you have no political capital. You just won re-election. Everyone thought you're an unstoppable force, and you've just been stopped by your own Republicans. So
yeah.
I think this is a serious moment, maybe not for the whole country, maybe not even for progressives, but among Republicans in Washington, they're looking at this leadership going, I can do this on my own. I don't need you. I can work with the Tea Party. I can look after my own district.
Yeah.
I can work with you sometimes, or maybe work with the White House. I'm a free agent here. And that's when you realize Boehner and Cantor and everyone else, they're really in trouble already.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think the White House is probably too distracted by Christine O'Donnell, who apparently is their main target, according to her.
Yeah.
According to her clever new ruse to get people to pay for her personal expenses under the guise of running for something.
It's a great line of business.
Yes,
and,
it is.
I think this could be the new stimulus. It's like all those people in New Hampshire.
Get me a stuff pack immediately.
If you can't go on the progressive cruise, you can at least run for office.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Richard Wolff, author of course, Renegade, Making of the President, and the new book, Revival, The Struggle for Survival Inside the Obama White House. Always a pleasure. Richard, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, see you soon. There
Yay!
He goes. He's my binky. He's the only thing that can placate me when Hal's not here.
I can't?
No.
I'm a poor substitute?
No, I didn't, unless you get me a step pack by the end of the show.
I'll work on that, Ms. Miller.
Sure, I did a fake campaign with Goldwater Miller, but I didn't ask anybody for money. How stupid am I?
You should have formed a pack.
Exactly. Get CeCe on the phone. Why weren't we asking people for money so we could be living off that for years? It was just a joke, for God's sakes. And so's Christine O'Donnell. She just doesn't know it.
Yeah.
20 minutes after the hour. So much to get to. A big, big show. David Schuster
yep.
coming up. Ian Millhiser of the Center for American Progress to talk about the health care ruling. And Representative Sam Farr
uh-huh.
in hour number 3. 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's life-altering. It's soul-changing. It's the summit of all human desire.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Join the party. 1-800-STEP-12.
25 minutes after the hour, Wendy in Chicago. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning. Listen, I'm not too proud to beg this morning. I am calling about those Pro Flowers.
Oh, your $50 gift card. Well, I'll be the judge of that, Wendy.
Okay, well, right. let me lay this on you. So I don't want to be a downer, but
no.
they're not for me. They are actually for my friend's husband. This ties in with the whole Bill O'Reilly Obama story when he was talking to him about going back to people going into debt for health care.
Right.
Well, my friend slash neighbor has gone into debt. She's had cancer for 4 years.
Aye.
And this family, I found out, are in such deep debt because of sickness that they've been visiting a food pantry twice a month. So I would like to give this coupon to my friend's husband so that he can actually give his wife a bouquet this Valentine's Day. Because unlike the Edward, Edwards family. She's very much in the same pathway as Elizabeth Edwards. Oh. They don't. They're deep in debt. So
yeah.
I want this Valentine's gift for them.
Wendy, as if I as an ex-Catholic girl, I could actually say no to this whole story. You wretched woman. Hang on.
Sorry.
All right, Wendy, hang on. There you go.
Yay, $50 Pro Flowers gift card.
Yay, go to Pro Flowers and click on the little microphone. Type Stephanie in the box, by the way.
Yes.
Because we can't all be lucky enough to win $50 gift cards, unless you have a really good phone call like that.
That's true.
All right. big show. Lots to go. Oh, we have the audio. I don't know if this is this from Lawrence O'Donnell's show or
no. I believe Wonkette put it together.
Yeah. Well, it's not like it took a lot of different people to notice how many times O'Reilly interrupted the president. I mean, first of all, isn't that part of it, Chris? It's O'Reilly's giant ego colliding with just a basic level of disrespect
right.
for this president that I just think we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, first of all, like I say, George Bush never went anywhere except somewhere friendly. So, you know, the fact that the president has fairly regularly agreed to go into venues like this on Fox News. So it is new in that sense, but first of all, what does he think? His opinion is obviously so much more important than the president's. You can't even let the president finish a sentence
right.
because, you know, clearly what you have to say is more important. Here's...
So you don't know anything.
Personally.
He can
absolutely dictate
leave,
what
you,
happens,
you
but
know,
what we can't...
That he's already done that, but the longer he stays in, the more people are going to die.
It's not working.
Yeah, but it worked for 30 years, so he had his run.
They are well a suppressed.
But you don't want the Muslim
Egyptian
Brotherhood.
People in Egypt that we can work with together as a partner.
Those are tough boys, the Muslim Brotherhood. I wouldn't.
The notion that the health care law was unconstitutional. I don't think
the Supreme Court's going to hear this one way or the other.
What they would things like.
Oh boy.
Yeah,
okay.
That's enough of that.
The
full video is posted up on your Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think Lawrence O'Donnell, because there was a second part of the interview that I think O'Reilly only aired on his show.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the total, 72 times he interrupted the President of the United States, which I'm just saying, it's just a tone and a tenor that Bill Maher was talking about, and he was absolutely right.
Yep.
And
the last time Bill O'Reilly interviewed George W. Bush, the tone and tenor was much more deferential. He interrupted many less times.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm
times.
Saying. Nobody's saying, oh, you can't.
Right.
Because, of course, Joe Scarborough spins it this morning that, you know, Bill Maher is saying it's unpatriotic to challenge the president. And, of course, nobody is saying that.
No.
Of course, you can ask tough questions, you can challenge the president, but it just, there has been sort of a baseline in America of how you do that to the president's face.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, can anyone give me, well, again, you can't give me one example of when it happened to George Bush because he never went anywhere, even vaguely unfriendly
right.
for questioning, you know? All I should remember from the campaigns is like Dick Cheney just sitting on haystacks with Sean Hannity. That's the toughest interview that they ever...
I think the closest he got to MSNBC was an interview with Brian Williams, you know, on NBC, not even on MSNBC.
Yeah, and let me just take a guess. How the level of the deference or at least, you know, basic respect was there. You can't even compare it. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show with David Schuster.
Warn you, I've been hanging out with
Stephanie Miller
for so long that if I'm exposed to anything intellectual, my brain might explode all over your face.
34 minutes after the hour. All right, lots to get to. Ian Millhiser, policy. He's not an animist. He's an analyst.
Yes, he's an analyst.
I often have to correct you on that for the Center for American Progress.
Yeah, because I type that all the time. On your sheets.
Talking about all the bank Jenny Thomas's drunk dialer is making off her husband.
Yeah, that's a lot of bank.
Okay. All right. David Schuster, our buddy, our pal, whom we love, joins us now. David, love you, miss you.
Stephanie, it's good to be with you. Any day that I can be on with you guys is a great day. So
aww, thank you, baby. Well, so much going on. First of all, in the media in general, we've been talking about, obviously, O'Reilly's interview with the president. That has to be a record, doesn't it? I believe they counted 72 times he interrupted the president.
I guess only topped by, Brett Baer when he did his interview with Fox?
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's... You know, I actually think it's O'Reilly who comes up looking badly, and the president looks good in this stuff. I mean, it's people are in a happy mood when they're watching the Super Bowl. I think it was smart for the White House to do the interview. And again, Obama seems I think Obama's his best advocate, and no matter what O'Reilly or anybody else throws at him, he handles it extremely well. And I think people, in a way, when they see sometimes
Go ahead. David, and that's exactly the point, is when some progressives scream, why does he do that? Why does he even go in there? That's why, because he comes off looking good and courageous, and O'Reilly comes off looking like a disrespectful boob.
Absolutely. And that's always sometimes the trick when you're doing an adversarial interview, and whether you think it should be adversarial with the president or not, I mean, I don't think you should, but on a Super Bowl interview. But in any case, if you're going to be adversarial in any interview, the trick is always, well, you want to do it in a way, but you want to sort of do it with a smile and sort of with kindness while you ask the tough questions. And I'm not sure O'Reilly just does come across as a bully, and I don't think it helps him, but his audience is huge and whatever.
And I'm sure the right today, searching for their usual false equivalents, will say, well, look at how disrespectful Katie Couric was to Sarah Palin. And if you ask me, she was really trying to be helpful. She really felt bad for Sarah Palin.
Katie Couric was throwing softballs when she asked Sarah Palin, what do you read?
Yeah, that's like the softest of, that's a Nerf ball.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Exactly. So, in other media landscape news, so Keith Olbermann, too, current TV, is kind of a surprise, and yet he really could put them on the map, right?
Yeah, I think this is one of the better business decisions that any sort of media company has made lately. I mean, current TV, as you pointed out, I mean, they're very small. They only have, I think, something like 25,000 viewers a night. I mean, Keith will automatically, get a huge audience for them, and he gets the sort of freedom that he wants. He gets to do the sort of the reporting, the analysis, the commentary that he wants with no sort of interference from anybody. And I think it's great. I think it's great for Keith. I think it's great for current TV. And I think the other thing is, I think it's really good for broadcast journalism, because whenever you have an organization like current TV or anybody else that says, okay, we're going to make an investment, we're going to go after a superstar, we're going to let the superstar hire a lot of folks and put on a high quality show, I think it's good for the entire industry. And I think it's also good for the American people to have yet another, high quality program that's on the air.
Well, yeah. I mean, Chris had to tell me that I have current TV, which I didn't know.
Yes, you do.
But now I'll find it. If Keith
it's
is going to be
there.
It's
up in the 200s or 300s, but you do have it.
Yeah. Keith will make it pretty easy for everybody to remember, I'm sure.
Well, but David, we all know about non-competes. Doesn't he? How soon is this? Have you heard any word? I thought he has a certain amount of time he can't be on the air anywhere.
Well, I guess the thing that surprised me the most yesterday, not that Keith would do this or that, but I heard yesterday that he could have the show on the air literally in a matter of months. And that's where I'm sort of shocked and baffled, because I know the folks at MSNBC did not want Keith competing at least until the 2012 elections. And so I don't know whether Keith was able to do some sort of head fake and say, okay, I won't go on cable news or broadcast networks. But I think just from a purely business perspective, I think one of the lawyers at MSNBC or somebody at MSNBC dropped the ball, because the idea that Keith Olbermann, your biggest star, is now going to be your biggest competitor literally 3 months after he's left your channel, I mean, that's huge. It's great for Keith. It's great for Current. It's a pretty dumb move for MSNBC.
What about the audience, though? Because I am notoriously fickle, as you know. I had a period of mourning when I lost my first MSNBC crush, which is you.
Uh-huh.
Then Keith Olbermann, and now, of course, I'm totally a Lawrence O'Donnell groupie. So I don't know what to do. I'm torn between so many lovers. I wonder, do you think Keith
will... Play the field, Stephanie. Go with all of them.
Yeah, that's why they invented TiVo, Stephanie.
So I can have all my lovers.
Yes.
But do you think he's going to be on at the same time? Do you think he'll actually be in his old time slot competing against Lawrence O'Donnell?
Might. I mean, I think 8 o'clock is a great time slot anyway. I can see him going at 8 o'clock, but I think Keith will also... we're all about these days, as you said, TiVoing programs and using DVRs.
Right.
And so I think Keith will have a very sort of heavy promotional, hey, if you can't catch me on current TV, when you come home, we'll set the DVR. I think there'll also probably be some sort of web or online component, so that stuff that for people who can't see current TV, who simply can't get it on their cable system, they'll be able to see segments online. So I think there'll be a lot of different ways to watch what Keith does. And I think that's the smart business model for all of us now. I mean, you can't just expect that people at 8 o'clock – are going to tune into you. You got to say, okay, if you happen to be around at 8 o'clock, please tune in. But if you can't, you know, we're going to make it easy for you to find us through the web or through all sorts of other means.
Right, right. Well, I think that what is it? Are they in like 60 million homes, right, as opposed to MSNBC's
like
in like 83 million or whatever? But I mean, he could, like I say, really put them on the map, sort of like Stern going to satellite, right?
That's a great analogy with Stern going to Sirius and satellite radio. And the fact of the matter is, MSNBC, I mean, when Keith started, and I want to say started in 2003, 2002, that, MSNBC was only in, you know, about 60 million mm-hmm. homes back then. So he really sort of, you know, it takes a while to get the cable carriage and to expand. But these days also, again, it's all about if you can attract sort of a very energized, passionate audience, even if it's small to begin with, it's a huge way to sort of
right.
grow. And I think, again, and Keith got something like 250,000 people to sign his petition when MSNBC suspended him. That's a huge base to start with,
mm-hmm.
and those folks, I think, are going to follow him.
Listen, I was on Oxygen Network when it started, and I actually had two national television shows, and it was like being in the Witness Relocation Program. Nobody that I know of saw anything, but I think you're right. Keith has a huge following, and so that'll be interesting.
The other thing is, you know, when you're on the sort of the broadcast side of it, when you're putting on a show, I always say it doesn't really matter whether you have 10 viewers or you have 10 million. You basically do the kind of show that you want to do, and hopefully the people who are watching get something out of it and are better informed about our society and culture and politics and whatnot. And if you do that, then eventually the audience, you know, eventually the audience will follow, or they'll follow you somewhere. It may not necessarily work on that particular platform, but again, you do a high quality show, and eventually, whether you end up going to radio or you end up going on another cable channel,
right.
I think eventually it works.
Right, and he's going to keep worse person in the world, which will continue to make right-wing heads explode because they have no sense of humor and irony. Elizabeth Hasselbeck literally thought Bill Maher was going to trade her to Hosni Mubarak.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much material to work with. I think, you know, Keith could probably do an hour-long show, Worst Person in the World, every night if he wanted to go that direction.
Exactly. So let's talk about, obviously, changing media landscape. The other huge story is AOL buying the Huffington Post. What is the impact of all of that?
I think it's actually I think it's another one of these stories that's actually good for journalism. I mean, Ariana now and what they're doing at Huffington Post, which is terrific. I mean, they now have access to a lot of folks that that may not have been sort of regulars to Ariana's site. And I actually think it's a smart merger. AOL's business model before they merged was headed in the wrong direction. I think this gives them some great original content. It gives them essentially what we like to call the portal to stuff that people like, and it expands the kind of perspective and the analysis that Huffington Post does. So I think it's good for everybody involved. The only concern that I have is I do have some friends who are over at the Daily Beast and some of these AOL political entities, and it looks like they'll be merged in with Huffington Post, and it's not clear what will happen to those jobs. So to the extent that there are fewer jobs covering politics mm-hmm. as a result of the merger, I think is going to be bad. But I think in general, I think giving Ariana a big chunk of territory at AOL will help AOL and will help all of us who love Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm. If Ariana Huffington, or as Fox News calls her, a far lefty blogger.
Yeah.
You know, Ariana is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I love, love about Fox. If they want to call like Ariana a far lefty, then Ariana will never be as far to the left as Fox News is far to the right. So what does that mean? Like, Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity are, ultra extremist right wingers, because if they're going to call Ariana Huffington a far lefty, I mean, it's just, the labeling is just nonsense.
It's hilarious. All I know is who's going over there? Howard Kurtz and a few people, pretty prescient on this whole thing, right?
Well, until you said that, I hadn't thought about it. Yeah, Howard Kurtz, he will have to report to Ariana Huffington. I mean,
yeah.
That's sort of an...
Oh, we all will eventually.
Exactly.
I probably can't get her on the phone anymore. She's been pestering. Oh, Stephanie, you'll have to come blog at the Huffington. And I'm thinking, oh, please, that'll never go anywhere.
Well, Stephanie,
I won't be able to get her to return my calls.
Well, I think you will, because my theory about the way all of this is going is that, yes, there's, there's great blogs, there's great reporting and whatnot, but I think broadcasting is also moving towards the net. And imagine, HuffPost Radio or HuffPost TV, where the Stephanie Miller Show is live streamed on Huffington Post, you know, just as it is on all the radio stations and whatnot, whatever. I mean, I think that's where a lot of this stuff is going to
go.
Because
we have stuff on Huffington Post.
Yeah, we already
now.
Post audio there, like little bits of the show. But,
I would love to, like, you know, be able to hear you guys live so that I can, you know, if I'm on Huffington Post in the morning, rather than try to have to, you know, it just makes it easy if I can say, okay, Stephanie Miller Show is, you know, all I have to do is a click away when I'm on Huffington Post. There they are.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, let me get Ariane on the phone. I won't be able to.
We're moving towards that direction. I mean, we're already on a bunch of, iPhone apps and smartphone apps.
And Stitcher.
And Stitcher Radio. Yeah. Yep.
Thank you for bringing this all back to me, David Schuster. You know what my favorite subject is. the only other problem, I think, you know, in terms of, like, going into the presidential, election coming up is, I think, as John King pointed out, I mean, we have this Fox News universe still, though, where a lot of the main candidates are on the payroll and aren't going to go anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a situation almost sort of unheard of in sort of journalism in terms of cover people. I mean, what are we supposed to do now? We're supposed to go, you know, do stakeouts outside the Fox News lobby so we can throw questions at candidates just as if, you know, if they were doing a town hall. I mean, like, I don't begrudge, you know, presidential candidates at a certain point of saying, okay, I'm not going to do media interviews until I'm sort of ready. That's fine. But, you know, the way we would do it on the campaign trail is, okay, if you're going into a town hall, then we put a camera and a microphone and we essentially cover the one entrance in and out so that you have to walk by and deal with our questions. I mean, I just sort of fear, you know, what happens when are we going to have to start going to, you know, Sixth Avenue in New York to sort of grab these people?
They've turned the rest of the media into a bunch of stuttering Johns. You have to basically ambush somebody.
I think also, I mean, ethically for Fox News, I mean, there was once upon a time where if you were even considering running for any sort of political office, you were persona non grata at the news organization you were working for. Now it's almost sort of, you know, it's a requirement. If you want to be taken seriously as a Republican presidential candidate, you have to work at Fox News. Poor Mitt Romney. I mean, what's he going to do?
Yeah, exactly. David, before you go, I always love getting your take just on, you know, obviously the big stories going on, because we've been talking about all this new media. Do you sense a change in what's going on in Egypt? I mean, this is a young Google executive who helped ignite this uprising, who's now re-energized these protests. It looks like he went on television. We saw him there crying, and this has seemed to, you know, give this movement new momentum.
I think it helps. My sense, though, is, I think all the social media and Google and Facebook and Twitter, I think it certainly is helping, but I still think that nearly all of this is simply driven by Egyptians who are yearning for sort of freedom and to sort of get this sort of tyrannical Mubarak regime off their backs and to help the economy. I think that's first and foremost. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people in Egypt who simply don't have access to social media or even the Internet who are participating in this sort of revolution. And so I think that's the main driver. Now, complementing that, I do think that, yes, Facebook, Twitter, social media, to the extent that's helping some of them organize to a certain extent. But again, I think the main issue, I think if there were not Facebook or social media, I still think we would see a million people pouring into the streets in Cairo day after day.
Yep, absolutely. David Schuster, always such a pleasure. Please come back
Stephanie,
sooner.
The pleasure is mine. You guys have a great week.
You too, honey. There he goes, David Schuster.
Yay!
We love him so much. Okay, Billy in Texas thinks that O'Reilly was not disrespectful to President Obama. We will talk to him next. I sense I may even give my first right winger a $50 Profiler's gift card.
Right wingers don't give flowers.
47 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller, she has one of these liberal talk shows that nobody listens to.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEP-12.
Yeah, you're right. We need to wait for Jim for that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that over the course of the top of the hour. The headline is Harry Ball's building is unlikely. They want to name a building after
a former mayor of the city, Harry Balls.
Okay.
B-A-A-L-S.
Of course.
Yes, it's
of
Dutch.
Of course. Of course. All right. Billy, my right-wing love muffin in Texas on the O'Reilly-Obama interview. Hello, Billy.
Well, good morning to you, my guilty left-wing precipitative dream.
I'm just your dirty little secret.
Yippee-ki-yay. Listen, I watched the interview. I broke away from the Super Bowl to watch that interview. Uh-huh. I didn't see anything disrespectful. O'Reilly asked some tough questions.
Well, of course you
president.
Didn't.
Well, I mean, that
did you ever watch him interview George Bush? Did you ever watch?
He asked him. he asked him very similar questions.
Did you think it was the same tone? Do you think he interrupted President Bush 72 times?
Interrupted. You know, I mean, I have a hard time with you, Stephanie, telling anybody that they're being disrespectful the way you and your guys mock people.
I'm a comedian, Billy. This is the difference. This is exactly what this false equivalence they tried to draw this morning about Bill Maher saying this. Bill Maher is a comedian. He, like every other comedian in the country, makes jokes about presidents. That's what he does. He never interviewed President Bush. President Bush would never have sat down for an interview with him or me. So that's a different thing. We're talking about a journalist. First of all, you got to give Obama points for going to be interviewed by him, don't you?
I do. I totally do.
So my point is, you cannot tell me that's the same tone and demeanor, you know, that anybody has taken with a president before. It's not.
O'Reilly was tough on Bush too, Stephanie.
He didn't interrupt him 72 times in one interview, and a lot of people, Billy, obviously thought he was just condescending and dismissive and talked over the president. He's still the president of the United States, isn't he?
When somebody's being polite, that doesn't mean they're trying to be or they're being condescending. In the upshot of the whole thing is his show tonight, O'Reilly's show, will still be number one.
Nobody's disputing that. In fact, the president even said, you know, you have a big audience. You're very persuasive, because he was talking about things that are untrue. Oh, people say you're this, O'Reilly said. And you know, Obama came back because that's what you tell them I am.
I hear you. And people on the right and the left, when they discuss things or argue about things, they're going to come from different perspectives. And I think I don't think that makes either side disrespectful towards the other one necessarily, unless you try to.
Billy, there is a difference with the president of the United States. It's like you can, whatever you just said about me, that's absolutely true. Am I immature sometimes? Do I make fun of people? Absolutely. I don't interview the president. That is different. I'm talking about when you are face-to-face interviewing the president of the United States, and I will tell you something. It would never have happened in a million years, but if I interviewed George Bush, I wouldn't have that, you know, rude and disrespectful.
Well, I don't see that whether you're interviewing Barack Obama, George Bush, or George Washington. They're all just men. They're president of the United States, but I'm not going to afford them some sort of special status and not ask them hard questions.
Nobody is saying that you can't challenge the president or ask them a hard question. It is the manner that Bill O'Reilly did it in. It's the fact that he interrupted him 72 times in a very dismissive manner that, you know, a lot of people reacted to. Do you at least understand that?
I understand that you're saying it. I just don't buy it because he's asking him tough questions, and you want to perceive that as being disrespectful.
I'm not perceiving the tough questions as disrespectful. I'm just saying the whole tone and interrupting the President of the United States 72 times is disrespectful.
He's condescending. I read condescending as being polite. Well, Mr. President this and Mr. President that.
No.
You know, I mean, that could
be... Well, you could at least let the man finish a sentence or finish a thought, couldn't you?
It was as if Bill O'Reilly didn't want to hear the president's answers. Bill O'Reilly only wanted to hear Bill O'Reilly's answers.
There was a lot of good give and take in that interview, and I broke away from the Super Bowl to watch it. So
I agree. I think the president handled it great, you know, but I'm just saying it doesn't make his tone, I think, appropriate for interviewing the president of the United States.
Well, we'll just agree to disagree. I still love you.
I still love you, too, and that's why I'm giving you a $50 Profiler's gift certificate.
Well, thank you.
All right.
See, we love you, Billy.
All right, now, you can go cheat on me by giving them to someone else, some other chick, and that's fine. I'll still be your dirty little secret.
Well, okay.
All right. Hang on, Billy.
Wow. I think you surprised and shocked the hell out of him.
Oh, I love him. He's got a free $50. We have to find out who he's given those to. Let's go to Mike in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Steph. Hey, Chris. Why don't we get Bill O'Reilly's body language expert and have her? What'd she think about that interview? How about that?
Yeah,
I thought you were a rude, overbearing boob, Bill.
Right. And you know what? The difference is when O'Reilly interviewed Bush, he said, "Why do you think the media hates you so much?" When he interviews Obama, he said, "Why do you think people hate you so much?" There's a world of difference.
Yeah.
And I mean, just to think that you're comparing those two interviews, he was so bored. It was just
right. And Mike, I love the fact you brought up the body language expert. Yeah. How about him sitting on the edge of his chair, a little bit over aggressive?
Like he was going to lunge into his lap.
I know. Like he was going to.
So weird.
Exactly. His legs spread wide open like he was going to pounce like a cougar. All right. We have Ian Millhiser and the Harry Balls building as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 minutes after the hour. It's a very, very important topic, and we will get to the Harry Balls building in just a moment.
Say what?
Hmm?
What?
What? Ball sex? Uh-huh. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12.
Is that the building that held the Itchy Kitty?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, no. This is a different building entirely.
Oh,
in Fort
okay.
Wayne, Indiana.
Oh,
we'll get
okay.
to that story in just a bit. We have more important things to get to. Ian Millhiser, who is not a legal animus. He's a legal analyst for the Center for American Progress, as I often have to point out to
yep.
you. Good morning, Ian.
Hey, you know, I don't know how I feel about being the only thing between your listeners and the Harry Balls.
I know. I'm sorry. You're kind of a buzzkill this
it's
morning.
It's a former mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. B-A-A-L-S.
And, of course. We
yeah,
all know that.
Of course.
Yes. All right.
Of course.
Yes. But let's talk about noted drunk dialer Ginny Thomas making bank off her husband Clarence Thomas's court decisions, first of all. You have a great piece about that.
Oh, yeah. Ginny's got a new job.
Yes.
She's a lobbyist now, which, you know, I actually don't have a problem with her lobbying so long as her husband recuses from every single case where she worked on the law being challenged in that case.
Right.
What I do have a problem with, though, is that there's this weird line in her new firm's name is Liberty Consulting.
Right.
And they have this line on their website that says Liberty Consulting offers advice on optimizing political investments for charitable giving in the nonprofit world or political causes. Now, you may remember a little case called Citizens United, which
yeah.
was the case that opened up the floodgates for this kind of political investments. So it looks a whole lot like Ginny Thomas is getting rich off of her husband's Supreme Court decisions.
Hmm. Well, you know, Ian, you know, a lot of this just sounds like a no-brainer to me, you know, in terms of conflict of interest. Between that and all these right-wing justices going to these Koch brothers political events,
mm-hmm.
how are they getting away with this these days? I mean, including this Ginny Thomas thing.
You know, life tenure is a wonderful thing. Judges serve
yep.
for life, and the only way to remove a judge really is through impeachment, which requires half of the House and two-thirds of the Senate. So I think that, you know, Justice Thomas has decided that, you know, he may not be above reproach, but he's above consequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's led to circumstances like this.
Wow. You know, yesterday, Ian, we were talking, we have another post about the Tenthers, the right-wing movement known as Tentherism, which claims pretty much everything Congress does. Violates the 10th Amendment and is
mm-hmm.
unconstitutional. You talk about Tom Coburn, who declared all federal involvement in education, including Pell Grants and federal student loans, is unconstitutional. I mean, in Arizona, they're trying to pass a law saying they don't have to pay attention to any federal laws. What the hell is going on in this country judicially?
Yeah, this is nuts. I mean, this is something called nullification, and it's something that we saw before the Civil War, and we saw it in, like, the death throes of Jim Crow when states were trying not to follow Brown v. Board. States just declared, oh, yeah, if there's a federal law that we don't like, we don't have to follow it. We'll just nullify it. And this has now come back with a vengeance. At first, you had states trying to nullify the Affordable Care Act, and now you have states, you know, just trying to nullify any law they don't like. The problem with it is that the Constitution expressly forbids this. The Constitution says that federal law shall be the supreme law of the land, not Arizona's law, not Virginia's law, federal law. And so, you know, what they're doing here isn't just wrong, but it's something that the framers anticipated, and they've put a special line in the Constitution saying, hey, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you wrote a great piece, and I also, I don't know if you saw one that was in the LA Times this weekend. It's a law professor, and I thought it was very well said. He said earlier this week, after grading student papers from my Yale Yale Law School class on constitutional law, I began reading Federal District Judge Roger Vinson's recent opinion declaring Obamacare unconstitutional. One thing was immediately clear. My students understand the Constitution better than the judge. I strive to be apolitical in evaluating students and judges alike over the years. Many of my favorite students have been proud conservatives, while others have been flaming liberals. The Constitution belongs to neither party. As every first-year law student learns, lower court judges must heed Supreme Court precedents. And he goes on, much as you do in your post, to explain why this is, you know, it is not going to be declared unconstitutional.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would never be the sort to say, to claim that a judge is acting in bad faith. Maybe Judge Vinson just, you know, lacks basic research skills. But when you... You know, but when you read his opinion, there are errors upon errors in there. I mean, my favorite one is he claimed that for the first 100 years of the Republic, Congress never tried to regulate what's called interstate commerce. They never passed a business regulation. Right. They never passed a shipping regulation, nothing. And as it turns out, George Washington signed the law regulating interstate commerce in, I believe, the first year of his presidency.
Yes.
It was a fairly comprehensive law regulating what ships do and how they carry cargo.
He also, by the way, in 1792, signed into law a militia act that obliged Americans to equip themselves with muskets, bayonets, cartridges, and the works.
That's right. There was a gun mandate. So, you know, it seems to be if you can have a gun mandate, you know, why can't you have a health insurance mandate?
Yeah, yeah. For some reason, I think the right wing would be all good with that, with the gun mandate being reinstituted. So you write, let's see, blah, blah, blah. Make no mistake, his opinion is riddled with errors. Most egregiously, it literally writes an entire provision of the Constitution out of the document, ignoring that the Constitution does not simply give Congress sweeping authority to regulate the national economy. It also gives Congress, in conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia's words, every power needed to make that regulation effective. So you say, basically, there's no reason to fear that this is not going to survive contact with the Supreme Court.
I mean, I think it would be very, very unlikely for the Supreme Court to strike this law down. You know, Chief Justice Roberts is very conservative, and he has said that Congress has a very sweeping power to make sure its laws are effective. Scalia has said the same thing. Justice Kennedy, who's one of the conservatives, has said that Congress has a pretty broad power in that space. So, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say we're looking at least a 6-3, possibly even a 7-2 or an 8-1 here, unless the justices decide that, oh, wait a second, I could do whatever the heck I want, Bush v. Gore style. And, you know, that's the only danger lying out there, is that if the justices decide that they are going to ignore everything that has been done in the last 230 years of constitutional law, including decisions that were made by Chief Justice Marshall in, like, the early 1800s,
right,
then, yeah, they can overrule everything this law down.
Right. You put this in that kind of historical perspective, which I think is useful. You know, you talk about they tried to do this with everything, right, including Social Security, whatever. You say, in other words, Vinson handed down a decision much like Wilson's 70-year-old opinion striking down Social Security. His decision was heavy on rhetoric, light on actual legal reasoning, but certain to be ignored by higher court judges who understand their duty to follow the Constitution. You say when Vinson is remembered 50 years from now, if anyone remembers him at all, he'll be remembered as one of the long line of activist judges who stood to thwart history and got run over by it. Which
yeah, no, the, whoever wrote that was really smart.
that's you.
It's an important point that Social Security was struck down by a lower court judge. The Civil Rights Act was struck down. The Voting Rights Act was struck down. The minimum wage was struck down.
Right.
Even child labor laws at one point were considered unconstitutional. And yet the Supreme Court stepped in and they said, no, that's not how this works.
One of your favorite claims is the claim that the Boston Tea Party renders the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional. What did he mean, huh?
I think he was just trying to give a shout out to the Tea Party there. He has this weird line where he says, well, surely the same government that boycotted tea wanted there to have been a tea mandate back in the day. But, you know, what the Boston Tea Party was about was taxation without representation. And the last time I checked, the Affordable Care Act was passed by elected representatives representatives, not by, you know, unelected people like, say, Roger Vincent.
Yeah, this is what, you know, this is the same thing was echoed in this, you know, by this constitutional law professor in the LA Times. He said, Vincent also mangles American history and constitutional structure in a clumsy wave to today's Tea Party, because that's what rulings are for, shout-outs to yeah. crazy political parties. He rhetorically asked whether Americans who fought a tax on imported tea in the 1770s would have authorized Congress in the 1780s to mandate tea purchases. Huh? I mean, yeah, it didn't make any sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could also say that, you know, because the Boston Tea Party was protesting taxes, that all taxes are unconstitutional. I mean, you can go pretty far down this rabbit hole if you want to, but there's a reason we don't interpret cases that way. We don't pick random historical events
yeah.
and try to, you know, come up with a legal theory out of it, because you can pretty much come to any conclusion you want so long as you, you know, you do your scavenger hunt thoroughly enough.
Let me get your take on this last thing this professor's opinion. He said Obamacare regulates a healthcare industry that obviously spans state lines, involving billions of dollars and millions of patients flowing from state to state. When uninsured Connecticut residents fall sick on holiday in California and get free emergency room service, California taxpayers, California hospitals, California insurance policyholders foot the bill. This is an interstate issue, and Congress has the power to regulate it, period. He goes on to say there's nothing improper in the means Obamacare deploys. Laws may properly regulate both actions and inactions, and in any event, Obamacare does not regulate pure inaction. It regulates freeloading. Breathing is an action, and so is going to an emergency room on the taxpayer's nickel when you have trouble breathing. I mean, right, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, what the Constitution actually says, it says that Congress can regulate interstate commerce. So if you want to get around a health care law, you have to say that health care isn't interstate, which is clearly not true. You know, there's a huge national health care market. Or you have to say it's not commerce, which is also obviously not true. People, you know, exchange money for health care or for health insurance, for that matter, all the time. So, you know, what they're basically doing here is, you know, they found a law they didn't like. They've invented some new idea about the Constitution. And I keep reading the Constitution, trying to find it in there. And for the love of me, I just can't.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Ian, it is always a pleasure. And now we must move on to whether hairy balls will be covered underneath the new health care bill.
Well, I apologize to all your listeners for keeping them.
That's all right. With your legal reasoning and whatever. Thank you, Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. All right, listen, this is an important issue, and we will talk about the controversy over the hairy balls building in Indiana. 17 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Right.
Call Find Stephanie you. Now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-12.
I've never seen you in diamonds or frills.
Bill and...
Come to think of it, I haven't either.
I don't have those. Bill and Madison, welcome. Hi, Bill.
Hey, hi. Excuse me.
Ooh.
I would never want to accuse a right-winger of lying.
No.
But that guy who was defending Bill O'Reilly obviously did not even watch that interview, because he said he broke away from the Super Bowl to watch it. It aired on Fox 2 hours before
yes.
the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you gave some flowers to a guy who is not a very honest person.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
He's rewarding dishonesty. I might as well go back to the Republican Party. All right. Mickey in Asheville, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Mick.
Hey, Stephanie, how's it going?
Good, go ahead.
All right. I've been happily married for a long time, and I think my wife's getting a little crazy overboard with your promotions. She just keeps talking about how she's so looking forward to putting Stephanie in her box.
Oh, you know, kids. Come on, settle down out there. All right. One Tommy in Palm Springs, one last comment on the O'Reilly interview. Hello, Tommy.
Hey.
Hey.
You know, I did notice one thing for sure, and that is that, well, notwithstanding that he did interrupt him every single time, he never even let him finish his sentence. But also, they showed them in frame together, They yes. never showed George Bush and Bill O'Reilly in frame together because Bill O'Reilly's a giant of a man.
Yes.
And, you know, and it would, you know, it would look like, you know.
Bill O'Reilly looked like he was getting ready to do a jump ball with the president, didn't he? He was just like on the edge of his chair.
George Bush would have looked like his little ventriloquist dummy. You
know? All right. Thank you, honey. All right. The breaking news, Jim, out of Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Ball's building is unlikely.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Oh. How are the Hirsute Testicles building is going forward?
I don't know. Are there any alternate titles that they've come up with yet? Shave Swans building? Anything? No?
Pat McCrotch?
I don't know. Despite garnering far more support in an online poll than the thicket of other suggestions, residents shouldn't expect Fort Wayne's new government center to be named after the city's longest tenured mayor. Longest tenured.
Mm-hmm. He had the longest tenure to any mayor.
Mm-hmm. Harry Balls did. Mm. Deputy Mayor Beth Malloy said naming 200 East Berry Street the Harry Balls Government Center was probably not going to happen. The name received 882 votes on the city's website.
Of course it did.
More than triple that of its nearest competitor, the Eugene Johnson Memorial.
No!
Yes. Harry Balls nudged the Johnson Center out of the way.
Hmm.
It overshadowed the Johnson name.
As well it should.
Mm-hmm. Balls, pronounced balls by then by the then mayor, but Bales by his descendants.
Ah,
oh, it's
Bales.
Like the Boehner Boner thing.
Okay.
Oh, please. Became the Republic.
Could be Harold Balls. That wouldn't be quite as bad.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Bales.
Became the Republican Frankenstein. He became the Republican nominee for mayor in 1934 and was elected for three successive terms. While Balls was a popular mayor.
Mm. It's pronounced Frankenballs.
Malloy noted he had an unfortunate name, and some elected officials have said such a name would be an embarrassment to the city. Regardless, Malloy said the online feedback effort has been a success because it generated interest in local government and created buzz. Yes, Harry Ball's got a buzz online, for sure.
Wow.
Trimmed.
Yes, she said, I'm glad people want to get involved. We're having fun with government. Oh, yes, we are. We are. In fact, you know what? Our listeners, Chris, have more immature fun facts than any group of people that I've ever heard of. Nan writes from Fort Wayne. Steph, there also was a Papa Joe Greasy Dick.
Oh.
G-R-E-S-I-E-D-I-C-K. Who was the owner of a very large brewery in Fort Wayne. This name was part of the radio commercials. I can't remember which beer.
Of course you wouldn't remember the beer. You're too busy laughing.
Laughing at the name Greasy Dick.
You know what? I think they should name that building Harry Balls, and they should only serve Greasy Dick beer in there. Because...
So and Bill Harry O'Reilly, Balls or the Greasy Dick?
And Bill O'Reilly should have to report this story. Because...
You got a letter.
Live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
No.
When he reads the letters, you know.
Oh.
Bill O'Reilly has a habit of not really.
Jack Mayerhofer, Springfield, Massachusetts.
Dick Pinch.
Dick Pinch, Clear Lake, Iowa.
Oh, man.
Jeff in Orange County. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, God.
I don't know how to follow all of that.
No, you really can't. You can't.
I wanted to comment on the Huffington Post issue in comparison to Comcast taking over at NBC and Keith Olbermann being released within days, but, oh, gosh, they're unrelated events completely. I would predict within 6 months or so, as David Schuster was pointing out, they're going to have to combine workforce there. Those leaning left will probably be looking for work. Those leaning right will be taking over the positions under the shrink wrap of the Huffington Post name so that they can get their right-wing agenda out.
Yikes.
And have it seem like it's still
I
under
hope
the Huffington
not.
Post.
Gee, Mr. Grumpy Gus. No? Okay.
You may be right.
Hope not. 29 minutes after the hour. Hey, Vice President Biden, Jim, was talking about high-speed rail yesterday.
That's a
which
big effing deal.
It's a big deal.
For it
sure.
Is.
Yeah. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Kids.
Stephanie Miller.
It was an extremely popular show with an extremely simple premise.
Yes, it is. And this morning, it's Harry Balls.
Harry Balls.
Harry Balls.
Jim and I were wondering before the break whether he ever actually got through a press conference or not.
Hello, I'm Harry Balls. And
Craig.
You know my assistant, Willie Dick.
Greg in Los Angeles is from Fort Wayne, and he remembers Harry Balls. Who doesn't have at least one good Harry Balls story? Hello, Greg.
Good morning, Stephanie and the Merch.
Uh-huh.
I remember him. I was a kid at the time, but even then, I knew there was something weird, strange, and wonderful.
You must have been overly developed for your age if you remember that at a young age.
How could you not know that? I mean, even as a Catholic kid growing up in Fort Wayne, Indiana at that time, I knew that was kind of strange. But, you know, it was one of those things where everybody's thinking, well, nobody else is going to vote for him, but just for stuff and giggles, I will.
Why wouldn't he go by his, like, a full name, like Harold Balls or something like that?
I think that was his full name, Harry Balls.
Oh, dear.
That's what it was pronounced at the time. I don't know if these revisionists are doing it now, but it was Harry Balls.
I mean, it was bad enough when I lived in Chicago. There was a pitching coach, I think, for the Cubs called Dick Pohl. But at least he wasn't the mayor of an entire city whose name had to be repeated over and over again.
Who says Hugers and particularly Fort Wayneites don't have a sense of humor?
That's right. That's right. Thank you, Greg. Oh, look, Greg's still laughing at the memory. See, I made a joke there he totally missed, that he was too young for Harry Balls, I thought. See, because he must have been overdeveloped for his age.
Now he's going to go suck down a greasy dick.
Sorry, what?
Beer.
Oh,
beer.
Yes,
beer.
Of course.
Famous Indiana beer. Paul in Alabama, you're on the... Oh, my God. Hi, Paul. Please help me. Help me. Hi, Paul.
Alabama. How you doing, Steph?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been down in South Alabama the last few days going to school and staying in the hotels, and they give these free breakfasts every morning. And I'd like to find one of them that didn't have Fox News Channel on when you're trying to eat your breakfast.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, we've had the Super Bowl. It's over. They've had all the parties and the parades and everything, and the only thing you see on Fox News is this interview. It's like he's the only person in the world that ever interviewed the president. I mean, everybody, I think, in the world has interviewed him except Fox News, and that's the only thing you've heard for the last 5 days.
Yeah, when Paul, did you see he said it's going to be the most watched television interview in the history of television? He only fell, I think, about 70 million short of that or something. I can't remember the exact numbers, but, gee, hyperbole much? All right. Speaking of eating, Jim, today's the big lunch, you know. Mm-hmm. President Obama is hosting John the Boner, found a little time in his busy schedule. Okay, you know what would be really funny? If the president had any kind of sense of humor, all the food would be orange.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, think of that.
Come on.
Cheetos, oranges,
creamsicles,
pumpkins,
orange duck.
All right, we're just in an immature mood today, that's all.
And they serve greasy dick beer.
Carrot souffle.
Yams.
Carrot souffle. Pumpkin pie, anybody?
Can you make carrots into a souffle?
Sure.
Really?
I'm just trying to think of orange
carrots
foods.
In anything.
Okay.
I got some in my coffee right now.
Mm-hmm.
I thought those were clouds.
Clouds
in my coffee.
He's hosting the House Republican leaders for lunch at the White House today. The Boner, Eric Cantor, and the Whip, Kevin McCarthy, all going for lunch.
When the Whip comes down.
Mm-hmm. Gibbs also disclosed, we did not know this, that Mitch McLipless was at the White House Friday for lunch with the president, which was not on the president's public schedule for the day because they didn't want to embarrass. They didn't want to show them bringing all the lettuce in and stuff.
Take a long time to enjoy all the lettuce. Slow and steady wins the race.
How long did it take him to get to the White House?
See, we just wonder if people at the White House are as immature as we are, if they just put a sole lettuce leaf on Mitch, on Yertle the Turtle's plate.
A big head of lettuce.
Yeah, an iceberg, a head of iceberg right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it wasn't reported, because it took him so long to get to the White House, because he was really slow.
Slow and steady wins the race.
I don't use cutlery. I don't have opposable thumbs.
Okay. Oh, imagine having lunch with Mitch McLipless. You got to watch him try to eat with no lips.
Oh, boy.
How
does he keep food in his mouth?
It probably doesn't. That's why it's gross. That's probably why they didn't publicize it. It probably just falls out while he's talking. It's just because he has no lips to keep it in.
I have a feeding tube.
It's just stuff just dropping repeatedly. Oh, God. Same with your grandfather. Oh, yeah. God.
And some Gatorade and straw.
Oh. All right. President Obama.
I'm perfectly capable of eating fruit just like normal humans. But no one should ever see that.
President Obama, why did I think after the hairy ball story I was going to be able to do a normal show?
I have no idea.
I'm going to get to actual topics. Okay. President Obama is calling for a six-year, $53 billion spending plan for high-speed rail as he seeks to use... I know. Chris Matthews was orgasmic about it.
Ah! Got a tingle on my leg!
I love to be able to sit on a high-speed train!
I got a high-speed rail going on my leg!
City to city! Wouldn't that be awesome? I love the train. It's my favorite form of transportation. I would love that.
I'm not a big fan of high-speed anything. I may have to deliberate about this for about 200 years.
Anything that moves that fast is probably frightens Mitch.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, he always looks startled.
Because of those glasses.
Yes.
Yeah. It's turtle
he
with
looks
glasses.
Startled to be anywhere. He's just, huh? Much like Joan Rivers, but just in a different way. Okay. An initial $8 billion in spending will be part of the budget plan he is set to release if Congress approves.
Spending? Communist socialist?
Trains could travel up to 250 miles an hour and connect existing rail lines to new projects. I think this is way cool. And it's jobs, and it's infrastructure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as Jill Biden says, it's a big...
It's a big effing deal.
Yeah.
Well, it's something we desperately need out here in the West.
Yeah.
We don't have train service here like they do in the Northeast. It's easy for people to go from city to city in the Northeast on the train.
D.C., New York, you know.
But, to go a short distance to San Francisco is...
I would love to be able to go to San Francisco. I have friends up in Carmel, down in San Diego. That'd be awesome.
Sacramento, even Phoenix or Las Vegas.
I would have a lot more friends if we had high-speed rail.
Yeah, I guess. I'd leave my house if we had high-speed rail. Obama's push for high-speed rail is part of his broad goal of creating jobs in the short term, increasing American competitiveness for the future through new funding for infrastructure, education, and innovation. He said he wanted, in the State of the Union, remember, he said he wanted to give 80% of Americans access to high-speed rail within 25 years. Vice President Joe Biden said the administration isn't going to compromise when it comes to spending on infrastructure, education, and innovation programs. They are going to, there are going to be cuts, though.
Infrastructure? Education? Innovation? What kind of commie claptrap is that?
Biden said we can't compromise. The rest of the world is not compromising, which is true. We're getting our ass kicked in high-speed rail all over the world.
USA! USA! Mm. We're behind everybody. Oh, boy.
And guess what their predictable response is from Republicans? Okay. It's insanity! It's insanity! This high-speed rail!
It's too fast!
So will these high-speed rails go around Ohio, around Wisconsin?
The Republicans will kill all their projects, but the rest of us can have it. The rest of us can have nice things, and you can't, Ohio, because of John Kasich. Sorry.
Sorry, Wisconsin.
You'd be a high-speed rail if it didn't have to make those big S-curves around the redneck states. It'd be a lot faster.
Ohio's not a redneck state. Parts of
John
it are.
Kasich.
Yeah.
Cincinnati's kind of. Well, it's basically Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Micah, Republican of Florida, said previous administration grants to high-speed rail were a failure, producing snail-speed trains to nowhere.
Well, I'm in favor of that.
He called Amtrak a Soviet-style train system and said it hijacked nearly all the administration's rail projects. Representative Bill Schuster, Republican of Pennsylvania, said Mr. Biden's plan was insanity. It's craziness.
Yeah. Okay. Seems to work pretty well in other countries where they have different priorities.
Okay. The vice president on the upcoming budget.
We mean it. It's real. And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot of things we care about. But we have to get it under control.
He's talking about the deficit.
And he was speaking inside a train station,
apparently,
actually.
Yeah.
Apparently he was.
He was.
Into a beer mug. All right. Mitch McLiplis on the budget.
If we don't immediately reduce the size and scope of the federal government, the deficit will be even bigger than last year's record deficit. Yeah. So we have to get real. We need to listen to our constituents. Freezes aren't going to cut it.
Yes, right, but leave our tax cuts alone.
We try to help here at the Stephanie Miller Show. We are helpers, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And we have mentioned before that his lack of lips, while unfortunate, he can't pronounce words like constituent. He should do what I do when I can't pronounce a word. People in my district. See, just change it to something you can pronounce.
Go around it like the high-speed rail will have to do all the way around Ohio.
When Michael Jackson had one too many surgeries, he realized that he was no longer able to say...
Hey,
area because it's
any other air.
It's the, you know, it's the muscles around the mouth that permit you to pronounce the word R, the letter R.
Any other error.
Much like O'Donnell or O'Connell, no, Mitch McDonald.
Huh? O'Connell.
Michael what? Jackson.
Who? What?
Huh? Didn't have any lips. I screwed that up.
No,
oh,
you
okay.
Screwed the whole thing up.
Okay, I'm all be over here.
And when your lips are missing, it's difficult to pronounce certain words like constituency.
He just shouldn't try constituents anymore. It's all I'm saying.
No.
There's, you know what? Let's send him a thesaurus and several other, you know.
Thesaurus. Sorry.
No, you can't say that either.
Thesaurus.
Book with synonyms.
Yes. Synonyms.
He can't say that either.
Synonyms. I like buns with synonyms on it.
Can I hear that, Mr. McConnell? I'm just saying, it's proving our point. He cannot say the word constituents. We don't even know what he's saying.
We don't immediately reduce the size and scope of the federal government. The deficit will be even bigger than last year's record deficit. So we have to get real. We need to listen to our constituents.
It freezes everything but my tax cuts.
Even deficit's a little tough for him.
Deficit.
Bless his heart. He tries.
Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
Government can't be your provider. It has to be your partner. And anybody that looks at government taking care of them, they're looking for the wrong end of that horse, if you will.
That's wrong end of the horse. You can't get the government's wrong end of the horse.
No, you're looking at Eric Cantor. Don't. Hey, come on now. All right, 46 minutes after the hour.
Y'all are mean.
Back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Believe me, this is so deeply warped, even I get it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
How bizarre.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Gino in Philly. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, sir.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Hey, I just want to ask a crazy question. Mitch McChickenlips said that, you know, we couldn't, we had to give his cronies tax breaks because they were going to create the jobs.
Yes.
So now that they've gotten the tax breaks, where are the jobs?
Thank you. And where have they been for the last 8 years when they've had the tax breaks?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's the jobs are still in China. Jobs are still in Taiwan.
In India.
And now that the vice president's proposing something that could actually create hard, real jobs here in this country, the Republicans are going to oppose it. You know, they're going to anything that this administration proposes, they are against.
Yep. I'm against it.
Whatever it is, I'm against it.
Thank you, Jim. All right.
You know what movie that was from?
No, I forget. All right.
You never knew.
It was an American president? Then I don't know. All right. When that drunk stack meets a future husband stack, man arrested. Man says he climbed into a tree to escape a pack of pumas, is arrested for drunkenness.
Hmm.
A drunk man said he was being chased Tuesday morning by a pack of pumas, climbed into a tree in South Pasadena to escape them and got stuck.
Why would you want to escape from a pack of cougars? I mean, that could be...
That could be fun.
Oh, he meant kind of hot.
No, not Courtney Cox. Or anything. No. The pumas, as it turns out, were imaginary, according to the police.
Really?
Were drugs involved?
Who hasn't done that? Do you remember the last time? That's how I ended up naked, chained to my steering wheel on the 405.
Sure.
Because I had been previously chased by a pack of pumas into a tree.
Or cougars.
Mm-hmm.
That seems more likely.
that does seem more likely.
Especially if they're on the elders.
South Pasadena officers received a call shortly after 3:30 a.m.
Well,
nothing good ever comes of phone calls after 3 a.m. Drinking games with brown liquor.
Or being up in a tree.
Exactly.
Being chased by imaginary pumas.
He was found 20 feet up in the tree.
Exit stage left, even.
He was found 20 feet up in the tree as firefighters set up a ladder to rescue him. Like a kitty, he climbed down himself. Oh, gosh. Jim and I, being animal lovers, we always love it when the animals win one. Feel bad about the man, but the headline is, man killed by armed bird at California cockfight was stabbed by rooster with attached knife.
Yes!
The animals have to win one every now and again. A man who was at an illegal cockfight in Central California, listen, don't bring the hairy ball story back into this. He was at an illegal cockfight in Central California, died after being stabbed in the leg by a bird that had a knife attached to his own limb. The autopsy concluded he died of an accidental sharp force injury to his right calf.
Wow.
My friend actually that sent me this said, Steph, the question is, how do they know it was accidental?
That's yeah, exactly.
Like an accident right. to me.
I guess it would be wrong for me to want Michael Vick to be...
No, don't say it. No. I know what you were going to say. Yes, if something accidental were to happen.
Accidentally, of course.
Yes, yes. All right. Lots to... What?
No, just...
Lots to get to. All right.
Lots of death and dismemberment today.
Yes.
And Harry Balls.
Exactly.
And Harry Balls.
Okay, let's move on to Donald Rumsfeld. Oh, dear.
He felt, he's told me since,
Colin Powell.
There was some people in the intelligence community apparently understood that one of the pieces of information he was given was a single source of information. And he felt that he didn't know that when he gave it. But here's an honorable man. He worked hard on that speech. And then for people to say Bush lied and Colin Powell lied and Condi Rice lied or Cheney lied or Rumsfeld. It's just not true.
Yeah.
He believed every word he gave in that speech.
He just did not know, and he knew, but what he didn't know, and he knew that he did not know, you know?
What he knows that they may not know, and make sure he knows what they know that he may not know.
Exactly my point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and...
Jiminy Christmas.
Where's my... I haven't used this in a while since the Bush administration.
You're a lying sack of crap.
All right.
You're a lying sack of crap.
Find it again.
You're a lying, scheming, stinking, nasty sack of liquid crap.
Yeah, oh, except that 6 months ahead of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, the U.S. had little hard evidence and relied heavily on analytic? Encephaleptic.
You're just like me a little bit earlier with that Michael Jackson thing.
And judgment addressing what it knew about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs, according to a declassified U.S. intelligence report. The group did not know the status of any nuclear enrichment facility, centrifuge program development, or attempts by Iraq to purchase a nuclear weapon, or know with confidence about the location of nuclear weapon-related facilities. Our knowledge of Iraqi nuclear weapons programs is based largely, perhaps 90%, on analysis of imprecise intelligence, according to the report.
So they pulled it confidently from their own asses.
So somebody that might have said very confidently, Jim, that we know where they are, they're...
We know they're north, east, west, south, southwest, east, north, east...
Round Tikrit.
Round Tikrit and...
Baghdad.
And places like that. They're up there in that area.
So anyone
that
would have said that would technically have been...
You're a lying sack of crap.
Yeah, just saying.
We know exactly where they are. They're over there in that area by that region next to that place where we went with that guy that time.
Donald Rumsfeld acknowledged yesterday that he and Senator McCain aren't the most compatible pair.
Oh, really?
He claims, in his first live interview, Rumsfeld fended off McCain's claims that Rumsfeld continued leadership of the Pentagon would have led to even bigger losses in the Iraq War. He said, McCain and I are not a good fit on Good Morning America, laughing for several seconds after that.
Please don't kill me.
Rumsfeld described McCain in his memoir as having a hair-trigger temper. Oh, I never heard that
about
him.
No, really?
Mm-hmm. And a propensity...
I'll butt you to death.
And a propensity to shift his positions to appeal to the media.
Huh.
Oh, meow.
Never noticed that.
When word of those claims leaked late last week, McCain shot back saying in an interview, while he respects Secretary Rumsfeld, they had a very, very strong difference of opinion about the strategy he was employing in Iraq, which I predicted was doomed to failure. He said, thank God he was relieved of his duties. Back during the campaign, as you recall, he said, I think Donald Rumsfeld will go down in history as one of the worst secretaries of defense in history.
My stars. Holy mackerel. Goodness gracious me, oh my.
He'll be a monkey's uncle and the worst defense secretary in history.
Paul
in Hartford, welcome, sir.
Hey, I finally had to Google Harry Balls, and I came up with a couple of articles that I thought you guys might appreciate.
Oh,
yes.
No.
The first one.
Does it involve teabaggers?
We suspect that he would have been a teabagger.
No. The first one is Fort Wayne officials refuse to slap Harry Balls on public buildings.
Oh, God.
And the next one says, scratch Harry Balls off list of names for government center.
Lest you think we're making stories up on the Stephanie Miller newscast, Paul. Let that be a lesson to you.
There it is.
All right. You don't need to Google your Harry Balls when you've heard it here.
Okay,
all right. Thank you. Oh, people will be chuckling gently to themselves all day at work. All right.
There's really not much you can add to that.
No, no, you really can't.
No.
We have Representative...
This may be another Alan Smithy production today.
I think so.
Yeah.
Representative Sam Farr. Oh, he's going to talk about the Peace Corps and the Nobel Prize and very lofty things like that.
Yeah. In relation to Jamie?
No.
We don't know, actually.
Could be.
Coming up on the big show, along with Right Wing World, Celebrity Stack, and much more. Don't go away. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Indeed, it is 6 minutes after the hour. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Please send someone you love the StephCast, only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance. What a bargoon.
It is.
It says I love you. Okay.
Like no other podcast can.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 1-800-STEPH-12, our phone number, toll free to join the party. Representative Sam Farr joins us from the great state of California. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie. Great to be on your show.
Great to have you. Your first time, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but I want to talk about, something very near and dear to my heart, the Peace Corps. You want to nominate it for a Nobel Peace Prize. Talk to us about that.
Well, I was a Peace Corps volunteer when I graduated from college back in the early 60s. It had just started. And when I went into training, actually no volunteer yet returned, so it was quite an adventure. I served in Colombia, South America from 1964 to 66, working in urban community development. And it just changed my life. Interesting enough, at one time we had six returned Peace Corps volunteers serving in Congress. And when we spoke to a group of students on the Hill, and we were all independently of one another mentioned in our speeches that the greatest experience of our lives, including being elected to Congress, was the service to Peace Corps. I jokingly said, yeah, that we can say that now that we've all been elected. But it was,
yeah.
It really was of the two most important milestones, but Peace Corps was beyond a doubt the greatest thing we'd ever done.
Well, I mean, it's you talk about how obviously there's been a lot of talk of Sergeant Shriver, who passed away recently, who founded it. But, just that whole theme of service, which we seem to have lost, service to our neighbors, you say near or far, in desperate need of a helping hand, is something that, we may have lost sight of.
Well, Peace Corps is always an individual contact. You're living outside the big cities. You're living in places where no Americans have ever lived before, and often cases no white people have ever lived before. And you are an anomaly there, and people are just enamored by having you there. The protection is your community. They just love the fact that you go and live with them. And I think for Peace Corps volunteers, you just realize that you're gaining another language, another soul, a whole new interest in a new part of the world, and it changes your life. You never go home without a fondness for that country you served in.
Yeah, well, I mean, I also think, it's part of what the president certainly has been trying to do since he took office, is kind of, improve and change America's image in the world. And that's part of it, is that, we generally have always been a really giving people.
I had a ride here in Washington. I always talked to cab drivers all from some other country. And the minute I mentioned Peace Corps, many of them will stop their cab and say, I'm in America because of a Peace Corps volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
We're now finding people that are electing, who have been presidents of countries, who talk about how the Peace Corps changed their life and how, because of that Peace Corps volunteer, they had these distinguished careers that got them elected to president. So it's life-changing not only for the volunteer, but also for a lot of the host country nationals.
Well, let's talk about other countries. Since we're on the subject, it is interesting, this whole concept of how one person can change the world, literally. I mean, look at this. You've seen this freed young leader, right, this young Google executive that was just freed over in Egypt, and seems to have given this movement their new momentum, don't you think? What is your take on what's happening in Egypt now? They've had the biggest protest yet, correct, yesterday morning.
I think that's part of our youth movement in America. Our history goes back. I grew up during the Vietnam era, and we were all protesters and trying to find an alternative way to solve the problems in the world. We now have 8,655 Peace Corps volunteers serving in 77 different countries. That's the highest it's been in 40 years. And Sergeant Shriver told me one time before he passed away, when he was was conversing with John F. Kennedy, that Kennedy imagined the Peace Corps could grow to 100,000 volunteers. They said we only have 8,600, and it hasn't been too much bigger than that. But 100,000 volunteers, and Shriver mentioned, he said, just think the countries we were first in were Afghanistan and Iran. Think what would have happened if we'd flooded that country with young, idealistic volunteers in the early 60s, would we be there now with our military?
Yep, yep.
Or, you know, Iran with the threats of the military. So it is. I think it's our greatest idea of foreign aid, foreign assistance. It's teaching people to help themselves, and you do it without a lot of. You don't have any money, and
we'd be doing a lot better all this time if we had more hippie peaceniks like you, my friend. So what I was asking though is, do you sense that, you know, a change in what's happening in Egypt? What is your take on that?
Well, I probably don't have any more inside information than you do, because the press is covering it so well, there's a lot of hope, and we've always been disappointed that Egypt hasn't had free and open elections. It's one of our leading foreign aid states. It's our friend in the Middle East, but we still haven't held it accountable for its lack of democratic institutions and democratic process. So I think this revolution that's going on will inure to the benefit of that country and hopefully to the rest of the world.
Representative Farr, let me ask you one more thing before you go, just in terms of what's happening in Congress. Reuters, of course, reporting that the House will vote next week to block funds for the health care overall. The vote will come in with the budget plan. What's going to happen with that? I mean, probably pass the House. I mean, it really is so frustrating when the president is reaching out again in such unprecedented fashion, saying, I'm willing to tweak things and fix things and improve things, but, you know, we're not going to repeal or refund or you know, defund this.
Well, there's a new mood by the new Republican leadership in the House that it's essentially they know the price of everything and the value of nothing. And I think that you cannot take a meat axe to any budget, your own private one, and expect to have a better life. You've got to be smart about it, and that's what we're trying to urge. Last year the House Democrats cussed the Senate because they would never take up most of our bills. This year we're praising the Senate as a bicameral legislature because obviously it's going to block these actions that are taken by the House. And I think you're going to end up at the end of the year wondering what did Congress accomplish, and it'll be pretty much stuck.
Exactly. Exactly. Representative Farr, always it's so great to meet you finally, and we hope you'll come back again.
Love to. Love your show.
Thank you, sir. There he goes. Well, what great taste he has.
He certainly does.
Representative Sam Farr.
He's from the Salinas area.
Yes, the great state of California.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
A lot of information on the Harry Ball story.
Oh, we're back to that again. We might want to reset this story for new listeners.
Confusing. They're trying to decide whether to name a building in Fort Wayne, Indiana, after former Mayor Harry Balls.
B-A-A-L-S.
Yes.
That's how you spell his name.
Yes.
Yes.
Pronounced.
Harry Balls.
Balls.
Yes.
Josh from San Diego just wanted to point out one of the guys in my wife's extended family is named Harry Sachs. Maybe that's an alternate name. Maybe they would like
I don't
that
think
more.
They're going to slap that on a building either.
No,
scratch that as well. Okay. Oh, looky here. It's another unsolicited testimonial to the power of the Steph Show and the Steph sponsors. Bruce writes, Steph, just renewed and transferred my Carbonite subscription to my newish laptop and entered your promo code. Thank you. I love being... Never mind. What? Thank you for two bonus months. You are welcome. That, as you say, would be a bargoon. I even renamed my computer Stephanie in your honor. Oh, it's like, what's the middle of that old Ali Sheedy movie? Stephanie. Next month, I'm traveling to the UK. And
Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie. Nice software.
Thank you. Next month.
Yes, Carbonite is nice software. Mm-hmm. Very nice software.
No, Stephanie, I know.
Next month, I'm traveling to the UK and plan on taking my laptop just so I can sync your show to my Zune. Sounds fancy.
Wow. He wants to sync our show?
To his Zune.
Oh, that kind of sync, not sync.
Who's Zuning who here?
Huh?
I can be confident that if anything goes wonky or the electrical adapter from Britain blows up my computer, at least my files are safe.
That's true.
You know, Britain sometimes...
Computer says no.
Sometimes.
Computer says yes.
A little Britain, get it? Okay. All right.
Oh, hi.
Thank you, Bruce. All right, You know, I have a Facebook page. I think it's important that everyone recognize that.
You do.
And I don't know how many fistfights it started, but this one...
Not as many as I got into with Joe the Plumber last night.
You got a Twitter fight with Joe the Plumber.
Yeah, I did.
Why?
He said that Reagan would have never cut and run.
Oh, please, Joe.
He did cut and run.
And I reminded him, did you forget about Beirut?
Oh my God.
And he said, I was talking about Libya. I said, you still have forgotten about Beirut.
Yeah. Well, you're still a moron.
Yeah.
Pull up your pants. All right.
So there.
All right. This is an Annapolis, Maryland story. A Facebook status report about someone's mother resulted in a pair of fistfights between teenage girls over the weekend, according to...
Chick fight!
Chick fight! See, this is what happens. A little game of Yo Mama spirals out of control thanks to Facebook.
Yo Mama's so ugly, that sort of thing?
Yeah. See, it can cause a good thing, a revolution for democracy in Egypt, or it can cause a Yo Mama fist fight.
It can cause a chick fight. In Maryland.
Could you take your organ out for me, please? Yes. You know me, I'm all up to date on all the high-tech, fancy things like Zoom and...
Whatever.
Stuff, the Stitcher and the...
What?
Okay.
You have people who are up to date on that for you.
Well, as an ex-Catholic girl, I know this. The Catholic Church has endorsed a confession app for sinning iPhone users. 21st century Catholic sinners can look to their smartphones for salvation thanks to a new confession app. The app named Confession, a Roman Catholic app, is now available for the iPhone, iPad, and iTouch through Apple's iTunes App Store for only $1.99. And two Hail Marys and an Our Father.
You realize it's not going to be terribly private, you know. Someone could pick that up.
I never got that whole confession thing anyway. How did they decide?
It was completely arbitrary.
Like, what did my brother get for trying to hang me? Did he ever, I don't know. He tried to hang your sister?
One
okay,
and a
say
half Hail Marys.
Three
and
is something.
Is the Catholic rite of confession, is that in the Bible anywhere?
I don't know.
Or is it just something completely made up by the Catholic Church?
Catholicism wasn't in the Bible.
I don't know. On all of my stand-up comedy tours through comedy condos, maybe. I never read the Bible in the bedside
never
table.
Read the Gideon
so I don't
Bible?
Know. So I don't know. Mm. 18 minutes after the hour. I'll have to wait till Friday and ask John Fugel saying.
He would know.
18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God. That's kind of hot.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Chaka Khan.
Stephanie Miller.
Chaka Khan.
Stephanie Miller.
Chaka Khan.
Stephanie Miller.
Chaka Khan.
Yes.
Stephanie Miller.
Join the party. 1-800-STEPH-12.
23 minutes after the hour. All right, all y'all's immature people out there, please. Steph, regarding Harry Balls, the mayor.
The former mayor of
Fort Wayne. And they don't want to, they are not going to slap the Harry Balls on that building there.
No.
Because that's
they would like you to scratch that.
Yes, exactly. They're not going to name the building there. Seth, Greg writes on WGN-TV, there's a weatherman Pete Sack, anchor Dick Johnson, and anchor Jackie Bang. Just saying.
Wow. Yeah. I remember Jackie Bang.
This one from, let's see, Donna. I swear to God, Seth, friends of mine's gynecologist named Dr. Harry Beaver.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that. In fact, a friend of mine from high school is a gynecologist now, and I think he's aware of Dr. Harry Beaver.
Really?
Yes.
And who isn't? Okay, Robert in Palm Springs. I'm going to the gyno today. He doesn't have that fun a name.
No.
Hi, Robert.
Good morning. I have Valentine's wishes for all three of you.
Oh, thank you. What is it?
Sure. One for Chris, that I hope that Jazz becomes certified as a seeing eye cat.
Thank you.
For Stephanie, I hope that they end all tariffs on box wine.
Thank you.
And for Jim, I hope he gets a one-man Vegas show that's called Behold, I Am Harry Balls.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Oh, boy. Ricky in California, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's a two-man show, but, you know.
Yes. Hi! Hi, Ricky.
Staphylosis. How are you doing?
Yes. Go ahead.
That's a condition of Steph. Anyway,
Steph infection.
I went to high school in Fort Wayne. I grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And sitting around in the chemistry lab one day, we were trying to figure out what Harry Balls' wife's name would have been.
Mm.
And we figured Ophelia.
Hi! Oh, heavens. Yeah, Mrs. Balls. Hello.
Ophelia Balls.
Balls residents.
How's it hanging?
One wonders if they answered the phone like that. Okay. Well, you know what? We have important things going on. We have a major democracy movement happening in Egypt, for God's sakes. A young Google executive who helped ignite Egypt's uprising energized a cheering crowd of hundreds of thousands yesterday. Biggest one yet. With his appearance in their midst after being released from 12 days in secret detention, we won't give up, he promised at one of the biggest protests. Once a behind-the-scenes internet activist, he's 30 years old.
Yep.
Wael Gomnin. He's emerged as an inspiring voice for a movement that has taken pride in being a leaderless people's revolution. With protests invigorated, the vice president issued a sharply worded warning saying, we can't bear this for a long time. There must be an end to this crisis as soon as possible. Oh, dear.
Mm.
And he also said the Egypt's not ready for democracy.
Yeah, that's a little offensive.
Robert Gibbs called that unhelpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much like Donald Rumsfeld found some things unhelpful.
Hmm.
I find that very unhelpful.
Okay, Robert Gates.
I think that the Egyptian military has conducted itself in an exemplary fashion during this entire episode. They have acted with great restraint.
Yeah, I agree.
And Robert Gibbs talking about the Vice President, torture guy's comments.
Vice President Suleiman made some particularly unhelpful comments about Egypt not being ready for democracy, about not seeing a lift of the emergency law. And I don't think that in any way squares with what those seeking greater opportunity and freedom think is a timetable for progress.
Some said they were inspired to turn out by this emotional television interview that this young guy gave just after his release. He sobbed over those that had been killed. He said, we love Egypt. We have rights. So now they're saying, you know, this gave a resounding answer. Is there still momentum here? Mm-hmm. This seemed to give sort of fresh momentum. What's his name? Torture guy. A little ominous. He rejected any departure for Mubarak or end to the regime. He said, we don't want to deal with Egyptian society with police tools. Oh, that sounds ominous, doesn't it? He warned the alternative to dialogue was a coup, a possible hint of imposition of military rule. However, editors present at the meeting said he then explained he didn't mean a military coup. That's
no!
Why would you
what
think
other kind
that?
Of, what other kind
it's
of coup is there?
Coups.
So earlier this year, this guy, this really kind of is an amazing, like, new media story when you think about it. Gonim, am I saying it right? He anonymously launched a Facebook page earlier this year commemorating, this guy that was beaten to death by two policemen in June. The page became a rallying point for a campaign against police brutality with hundreds of thousands joining. For many Egyptians, it was the first time to learn details of the extent of torture in their country. And he said the first time they called for people to get, he said, we thought on January 25th we'd be arrested in 5 minutes. I'm not kidding. They were surprised to find thousands turning out, even back then, at several locations in Cairo. So he gave this, this interview. He slumped into sobs when she was showing him pictures of the two young men that were killed. And he said over the next 20 hours, about 130,000 people joined a Facebook page entitled, I Delegate His Name. Going to speak in the name of Egypt's revolutionaries. He appeared to strike a chord among the broader public, where some have absorbed the state-fueled images of protesters as disrupting life for no reason or as being directed by foreign hands. A retired Army general said it showed a face of truth, which the state media tried to cover up for so long. Many people are coming because they saw the truth. This really is like a people's revolution. So I think we're at another tipping point. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I will make a good first impression, so I need all of you to be your most normal.
Stephanie Miller.
Get all of your crazy yelling out of your system.
If you don't volumize my hair, I will choke you to death with your boyfriend's wig.
Very good.
What? 34 minutes after the hour. All right. Doug in Portland writes, I'll see your hairy balls and raise you Dick Sweat. The former congressman from New Hampshire was unfortunately named Dick Sweat. Mm. All right, kids. You know, I don't know why. I did not expect such a big reaction on the Harry Ball story. Huh. Jesse in Los Angeles.
We've been keeping it up for 3 hours now.
So exactly.
As it were.
You mentioned the Harry Balls building had an alternative name, Eugene Johnson. Why didn't they just split the difference and call it the Johnson and Balls building? If you're...
Oh, my God.
The Johnson Balls building. Okay.
I wonder if they had one of those big
19... I'm sure it was sacked.
I wonder if they get up one of those big 1940s telephones at the Balls residence. Mrs. Balls speaking.
It's Dick. Are you in?
Oh. Okay. Balls.
It's the same phone.
Balls residence.
Hello. Just a minute. Dick, are you in?
I'm always in for Dick.
All right,
I've heard that.
David in Albuquerque.
Balls is up for anything.
Hello.
Yes, hello, David.
Hello, yes. Just wanted to let you know that confession is in the Bible.
It is.
Gospel of John, verses 20 and following. That's where Jesus appears and says, breathes the Holy Spirit on them and says, if you forgive people's sins, they're forgiven. If you hold them, they're held and retained. That's right before the Doubting Thomas story.
Okay. Yeah, but where does it say you have to say 13 Hail Marys?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's tradition through the ages.
Okay, so that's made up by the church.
All right.
Three Hail Marys to our fathers make a good act of contrition.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, I don't know how they what the formula is, though.
Just mumble something in Latin.
In sixth grade, I was...
And then does it mean you can... I always wondered, can you do anything as long as you say the appropriate number of prayers afterwards?
Yes.
Okay. Free pass. Yes.
Yeah.
If you're not Catholic, you're screwed, apparently.
Yeah. In sixth grade, I was a non-Catholic going to a Catholic school, and we had to do confession, and I was always confused at what to do. I'm like, what?
More importantly, when Mrs. Balls answered the phone, do you think people thought that, you know, she had Tourette's or something, or do you think, like...
Balls!
And then did they just yell out something dirty, too?
Johnson!
Okay. Sue in Rockville, Maryland, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hello, Sue!
You didn't...
Oh, I didn't do the thing with the thing. Hello, Sue!
There you are.
Hello. Hello now.
Okay. I have to play, so these are two true ones. My girlfriend Jill's dad is Richard, and his name is Dick Finder.
Oh.
Yeah, the Finder. Yes, it is true.
I think there's an app for that.
I'm sure there is.
Don't I know it?
And my friend Linda Glad married Orvis Dick, and the wedding announcement did indeed say the Glad Dick wedding.
Oh, heavens. Boy. Oh, dear. Okay.
These are true ones.
All right.
You can't make them up.
No, all right. No. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Let's just, you know what? Let's dive into the right wing world.
Yeah, let's
see what's doing, shall we?
Distance ourselves from that.
Okay, Glenn Beck on the TV.
Why do you watch this show?
Because I'm crazy.
I hope.
Like you?
I hope it's because you understand that information is power.
Oh. Yes.
It's like why you didn't teach slaves to read, because if they could read, they could find information and they'd know their place. And it isn't as a slave. Information is power.
Right. Which is why I give you bad information every day.
Did he just compare himself to someone teaching the slaves how to read?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. You need something?
Now that you know that Obama is a commie, Nazi, socialist, Muslim, atheist,
use that information. Now you have the power to be as big a dope as I am.
To do something really rational, like attack the Tides Foundation.
Okay, Laura Ingraham on Fox and Freaks. And
we know what, from Robert Gibbs to some of the folks on Capitol Hill to the president himself has said about Fox News. And I'm glad, you know, Bill and he had this chat and, you know, they seem to have gotten a lot off their chests and that's good. But the fact of the matter is Fox is the number one cable news network because I think Fox is closer to the heart and in the thinking of more Americans than, let's say, CNN or MSNBC. That's a fact. That's more mainstream than the other networks. It also signals
because it's on the lower tier. You're like forced to watch it in any hotel or gas station in the country. Whereas MSNBC is impossible to find.
Yeah,
except maybe the doc blocks on the weekend.
They're mainstream, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? We have to go back to Harry Balls now.
Yeah.
Let's go to Vince in California. Hello, Vince. Welcome.
Hi, Stephanie. I'm your official casino chef of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, yummo.
And about 2 years ago, this topic came up, and I literally, in high school there in Pasadena, I met a girl in business class. Her name was Sonia. 3 or 4 months later, I met her brother. His name was Buster, and it was about 2 months after that I found out their last name was Hyman.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Come on now.
Can you imagine parents doing that?
Bad name for a gynecologist.
My friend Travis just sent me an instant message. His name is Travis Bone.
Yes.
And he plays the What Would My Wedding Invitations Look Like game all the time. Yeah.
All right.
Bless his heart.
Oh, bless him. May, bless his bone. May in Michigan, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
This is a true story. I am a former balls person.
What?
Really?
My father.
Me too.
My father.
Talking about your hat now.
My father's name was Dickie Balls, and my middle name is May. And the kids at school used to say to me, well, Ethel may ball, and then again, she may not.
No. Probably couldn't get enough of that one. Boy.
The show's been hijacked this morning.
Yeah. You know, we left driving world.
Lowjacked, exactly.
Blake in Chicago.
Yes, I used to have a client named Richard Head II.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
Wow. At least I say Dickhead's on the phone, and my boss would yell at us saying, you don't say that because you'll say it to his face one day. This is Blake from Snowballing Blake. I am now officially out of the snowbank pile.
Yeah, I had to interview, you remember on CNBC when I hosted Equal Time many years ago, we always had that guy on, Richard Blow.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm naturally immature, so I was... producer always used to be in my ear, do not call him Dick. Do not do it. Do not do it, Stephanie. Don't do it.
Is that who you are? What you do?
There's a columnist for the Washington Post named Dan Balls.
Steve in Long Island, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Morning, Steph.
Good morning, baby.
There was a NASCAR driver named Dick Trickle.
Yes.
And,
yes. Yes.
And that's who. But anyway, on the Fox News thing, whenever Fox comes into question, they like to say how they're number one. Number one doesn't make you factual, and number one doesn't make you be the leader of everyone.
Yeah, makes you entertaining, like a circus freak show.
It means you're, what the corporate structure wants, the propaganda for their side.
Well, that's not what Steve Doocy says.
We are a real news outfit. We've got a news wing, and then we've got an opinion wing.
Yeah.
And it is clear that at the nighttime, those are opinion guys. During the day, it's news stuff. Yeah. In this program, we got a little of both. So it looks as if they have now moved on, and they realize, wait a minute, it is a news outfit after all.
Right. And we're nuts for news. We're really nuts.
Yeah, the way you know it is because we have to keep saying it over and over.
That's how you know.
We are news. We just are news. They're like the news who's in Whoville. We are news. We are news.
How can Fox and Friends be part of the news when...
They're a little bit of both.
No, they're not a little bit of both. They have three far-right lunatics as hosts. They don't have any balance
That's
on their whatsoever.
That's what's known as a little bit of both on Fox News.
Oh, okay.
We have the right and the far right.
Mm-hmm. No, they just have the far right on that show.
And then the Glenn Beck on the radio.
We have to go to Obama lecturing the chamber. he said that he's, he's not a redistribution guy, but he says that the profits of companies must be distributed equitably to all of the employees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got to give it to the workers. You have to. You have to. So it doesn't sound like he's a redistribution guy as much as he is just a dictator.
I agree with Bill Maher, by the way. Why is he going to the Chamber of Commerce to apologize to them? He's like, he saved their ass. Ugh. All right. It really is. Okay. Bill O'Reilly.
Factor is not and never has been an ideological program. I ask specific questions, the president responds. You decide. I don't engineer anything.
No, of course not. You were unfailingly polite.
Well, lot of the people say, the folks say that you're a commie, leftist, Nazi.
72 times. 72 times.
And you interrupted him all the time. What do you think you are, the president of the United States?
Bill O'Reilly.
I'm going to interrupt you anyway.
Bill O'Reilly.
I don't
Many
care.
Americans bring preconceived ideas to any political exposition and rate interviews according to their ideology. But among less intense Americans, I think the consensus is that I got my questions in, the president answered some, dodged some, but the back and forth was spirited and worthwhile.
Yeah.
Also, I think Fox News showed the world that we are not in business to demean the president. We want answers, but are not on a crusade to harm the administration.
No, I think anyone can agree to that. By the way, have they covered the president quitting smoking yet on Fox News? Have they had like a Chiron? Why does the president hate the American tobacco farmer? Why?
I'm sure that's coming.
Mm. Jim, have you heard this whole debate? So, Bill Maher was on Lawrence O'Donnell last night making, I thought, a very good point, is that this was just unprecedentedly disrespectful, this mm-hmm. interview. Yeah. I mean, 72 times you interrupt the
president. No, I didn't.
I love the way Laura Ingraham just said, these guys got a lot off their chest. And it's like, what? This country isn't about Bill O'Reilly getting stuff
about
off his chest.
Right.
Like some kind of bromance with the president. I mean, it just was. And then Joe Scarborough tries to make it, I can't believe it with all the stuff Bill Maher said about George Bush. It is, there they go again with the false equivalency. He's a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
George Bush would never have sat down with Bill Maher or Keith Olbermann for that matter. So the fact that you get to the president's points that he would even sit down with Bill O'Reilly, and I think most people, fair-minded people, thought it was hugely patronizing and disrespectful. Chris, do you still have some of the literally, between the two segments, Lawrence O'Donnell's crew, 72 times he got interrupted.
Government.
So you don't know when he's going to leave.
Wow.
You can't absolutely dictate what happens, but what we can't.
You've already done that, but the longer he stays in, the more people are going to die.
It's not working.
Yeah, but it worked for 30 years, so he had his run.
They are well ordered. A suppressed.
But you don't want the Muslim
Egyptian
Brotherhood.
People. But in Egypt, that we could work with together as a partner.
Those are tough boys, the Muslim Brotherhood. I wouldn't.
The notion that the health care law was unconstitutional.
Right, I can't take any more of it. Just please. All right. 46 minutes after the hour.
Arrogant jerk.
Oh, God. Exactly.
Who do you think you are? You're the president of the United States?
You're just now realizing this?
Yeah, like his opinion was more important than whatever the president... I mean, why do you think you call it an interview? You ask a question and he's supposed to answer. 46 minutes after the hour. It's supposed to be a debate, you know? 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
For a good time, call now. 1-800-STEPH-12.
51 minutes after the hour. Justin in Buffalo. Oh, people, please get off the hairy balls, honestly. Justin in Buffalo. Harry Balls, the former mayor of Fort Wayne. The building will not be named the Harry Balls Building, so let's just get over it. Hello, Justin.
By the name of Mary Ann Hoare?
You do not.
That serious.
All right, thank you. Let's... Oh, boy. Ed in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Ed. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks. Yes. I have a friend in the Milwaukee area. Mm-hmm. His father's name is Richard Wacker, and what's worse is he named his son Richard Wacker the second.
Of course he did. All right, that's a family with a sick sense of humor. Okay.
Well, he's passing the pain through the generations, apparently.
Daryl in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Oh, welcome. I'm sorry. Thank you. Good morning. Actually, there's a NBA coach. I think he's probably in his third stint as the assistant coach for the Pacers. His name is Dick Harter. But when you say it fast, it sounds like Dick Harter.
Yeah, sure it does. Okay, thank you. All right, thank you. Jerry in California, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. This is an absolutely true story. UCLA had twin defensive ends, identical twins, Matt Ball and Dave Ball. And back when they were playing, I think it was Washington and Seattle, they both got to the quarterback behind the line, and the UCLA radio announcer in the excitement of the moment called it a twin ball sack.
Martin in Washington State.
There's got to be audio of that. I want audio of that.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Yes.
There's an author from the mid, I thought it was the 18th century, this early 18th century, his name's Claude S. Balls, who wrote a book called How to Tame a Wildcat.
Yeah. That's
Claude Balls by Claude Balls.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Sure.
Revenge of the Tiger by Claude Balls. Yeah. Yellow River by I.P. Freely. Yeah, those are jokes.
Bill, okay, thank you. Bill, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling Old Time Radio Hour. Hi, Bill, go ahead.
Yes,
Stephanie, first, I just want to say I love you.
Thank you.
Your belief, you're so pure.
Yeah, aren't
I? So pure. Yeah, you really are. I mean, you're absolutely right. That interview, so-called interview, was immensely, outrageously combative. And I just want people to think for a moment, all the people sitting out there in your audience who don't think it was combative or don't think it was inappropriate, I'd like them to just think if it were reversed. Mm-hmm. If there had been a black interviewer interviewing a white president and they had done exactly, the interview had gone exactly the same way with 72 interruptions, I wonder how disrespectful they would think that interview had been then.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. All right. A little celebrity stat for me. Could Charlie Sheen back to work in 2 weeks? Oh, my. I don't... Didn't they watch Country Strong? It's too soon. I don't... Charlie's attorney, Gail Galanter. Wasn't that OJ's attorney? Said we're thinking Charlie will be going back to work 2 weeks from now.
Really?
Yes. All right. Did you see Prince invited Kim Kardashian on stage at Madison Square Garden and then kicked her off? Speaking for all of America. Yeah, she was apparently froze. And
She was froze?
She froze because she was scared. Okay. And while Prince was dancing, he finally told her, get off the stage. Yay. Whee! Oh, no, the superficial reporting that Christina Aguilera is losing her mind after flubbing the national anthem at the Super Bowl, thus causing the baby Jesus to cry into a river of Mountain Dew. Christina Aguilera's sanity is being called into question, apparently by her own people who planned a mental health intervention only to retreat after she threatened to fire them all. That's what happened last time you two tried that.
I know. Tell me about it.
They wanted to, page six writing, they wanted to talk to her carefully about the issue, but they're not going to because they're scared after she fired them. Her people desperately want this to come out so she will get help. Oh, dear. Yeah.
You're fired.
Don't try it. Paris Hilton has taken up bodybuilding.
What?
Oh, dear.
Oh,
she's inspired by her fitness fanatic boyfriend and is apparently now on 3,500 calories a day. That's all she's eaten in her whole life before that.
She wouldn't know bodybuilding if it came up and bit her in the ass.
Her new daily exercise routines means she now can indulge in her favorite fast food treats after years of depriving herself. Her friend said Paris has always loved junk food. Before she started working out to this extent, she had to deny her cravings. Now she feels she can indulge once in a while. She's burning.
Yeah, well.
She's going to explode.
See how long that lasts.
Well, you know, it might end up just pushing the fat out further, you know, building up the muscle underneath.
Oh, I didn't get to the yesterday. The Me So Horny guy's running for, speaking of mayors more inappropriate than Harry Balls, Luther Campbell, the Me So Horny guy.
From Two Life Crew.
Yes, he's running for Miami-Dade mayor. Mm-hmm. Hmm. He thinks he can boost the economy with a tax on exotic dancers. That's his first idea.
Well... Yeah.
He said, even though all my stripper friends are going to be mad at me, I think we can stimulate the economy with a tax on strippers. They make all this money and they don't pay taxes. It's an outrage. It's an outrage. Why didn't Harry Balls get into this? Okay, Don in Ohio, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Since we downgraded everything, I had to call with, I dated a girl in school. Mm-hmm. Her name was Melanie. Mm-hmm. Last name, Wadd. W-A-D-D.
Hmm. Wadd. Really?
Dad's name was Richard.
Richard.
Oh,
of course.
You know, that.
I think some of these are made up.
I think so, too. I think we're spiraling downward as we close the show. Keith in Los Angeles.
Yeah, in my hometown up in New England, there was a insurance company owned by a man named Dick Tingleoff.
Tingleoff.
Tingleoff, yeah.
That sounds like some sort of contest that might end badly for somebody. Benny in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hola, mamacita.
Hello.
Yeah, I went to school. Hola, mamacita.
Uh-huh.
I went to school with Richard Hunt, and he became Itchy Hunt, and later I changed that to Scratchy Hunt.
Okay, all right. I think, you know what? Okay. I think I always take one call too many.
You
don't
do.
I just went this too much.
He used to be a seaman in the Navy, probably.
Now I'm literally taking phone calls for Mike. Okay, 58 minutes after the hour. Bill O'Reilly, for God's sakes? I'm not that stupid, people. This is an
Dick Pinch, Clear Lake, Iowa.
This is a real story about Mayor Harry Balls in Fort Wayne.
Jack Mayerhofer, Springfield, Massachusetts.
All right, listen, stop calling me. Carl Frisch from Media Matters joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then on the Stephanie Miller Show.